I am super excited to have you back for another episode of Red Receipt. It's a deep dive into the how and why of the brands we love and the creatives behind them. From blueprints to launch day, customers as community, and the detours in between. Big lessons and easy listening. Red Receipt is hosted by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. Joining us today on the show is Mickey Ashmore, the creative behind Saba, a footwear brand based on a traditional shoemaking method developed originally in Turkey. In 2013, Mickey set out to create a pair for himself, and ultimately it all snowballed from there. Ever since, he's been traveling the world, having held pop-ups in New York, London, San Francisco, Dallas, and Los Angeles, to name a few. Mickey sits down with us today to share his story of starting the brand, lessons learned along the way, and we are super happy to have him here with us today. We hope you enjoy the show. So I'd love to just like learn a little bit more about your personal background and then also how you started the business originally.
So I started the business in 7 years ago in 2013. I just moved just right before that back to New York, I'd previously been living in Istanbul for a couple of years. I'm not Turkish. I'm American from Dallas, from Texas. But out of college, I had an opportunity to go work for Microsoft. I went to Penn. I studied finance at Wharton undergrad, and had a job, kind of a random job out of college, took me with Microsoft to Seattle. I had originally been on the hunt for something in New York, but luck took me to Seattle instead, and I ended up there working for a year for Microsoft doing like a finance and strategy job. And I got an opportunity to work abroad for 6 months. And one of the cities that was offered was Istanbul. And I'd been there before and loved it, and actually had always suggested or dreamt that I could live there one day. So I guess my dream became a reality. And so I moved there. Originally, it was supposed to be just for 6 months. But I was having so much fun, and I learned Turkish and made a bunch of good friends. And at that time, it was 2010, Istanbul was a really, it's always been, I think it's still a fun place to live, but it was a particularly fun place to live. It was going through a real golden period, as far as I could tell. And so I ended up extending my stay and living and working there for 2 years. Were you still
working for Microsoft when?
I was with Microsoft the entire time for the full 2 years. And I was doing like a finance and strategy type role. At that time, Turkey was either the or top three fastest growing countries for Microsoft. And so it was just a really exciting place to be. And I was actually the only non-Turk in the office, which was also really interesting for me. I was really immersed in the culture and working with Turkish people. And it was a really cool lens from which to, take one of your first jobs, and then personally just a ton of fun. And while there, I was gifted a pair of traditional Turkish shoes, the shoe called the Yemeni. And it's a style of shoe that has been worn, not necessarily in Istanbul, but more in the south and the east. It's kind of more the Anatolian Asian part of Turkey, for centuries, hundreds of years. And it was, a really traditional style of house slipper, and I guess also street shoe that, fast forward from back then until today, nobody really wore anymore. It was truly a relic of the past. It wasn't like something that had been adapted or you'd see it all in modern wear or in Istanbul or any of those places. But the person that gifted me the pair, her family was from the southeast where we make our shoes. It's a town called Gaziantep, and it was a shoemaker. It was considered the last remaining kind of true artisan of this style of shoe in Turkey and by default really in the world. And the pair of shoes was pretty funky looking. They had a curly toe and a pattern, and they used a pretty interesting leather, but I loved the way they felt, and I thought they were just really interesting. So I would wear them quite often, wear them with to work. I'd wear them on the weekends. And one time wore them with the tuxedo to a pretty fancy wedding, and it was always a hit. And so I took those shoes and moved back to New York City. I got a offer to work for a private equity kind of venture fund here. And I'd wear my shoes around the city, and eventually they got destroyed with all the walking in New York. The traditional shoe was leather soled. And so I asked, I got in touch with the man that made the pair. His name was Orhan. And I asked him to make me a new pair, but I suggested some changes. I asked him just, I sort of sketched out a more modern look, no curly toe, no pattern across the top. I had a friend send him a really nice piece of black leather that was really good quality and really beautiful. And then I asked him to glue rubber on the sole, because traditionally they have a leather buffalo sole. And he sent that pair to me like a month later to my office, and they fit like a glove. And I knew they were pretty cool because all the even unstylish guys and girls that worked in my office thought they were pretty cool. So I immediately called Orhan and asked for a couple more pairs in different colors and just started wearing them. And that was like late 2012. And I was gifting them to buddies and friends. And I really didn't like my job at that time. There's a window open. I'm going to close it just in case it's a little bit loud. I didn't really love my job at that time. And so I was, I think, deep down looking for something else to do. And so I got the idea that maybe I could tweak these a little more and build a business around it. And so I called Orhan, that same maker, and asked him to send me 200 pairs and put the brand Saba inside of them. And I gave him a bunch of color names and some leathers. And they arrived to my house that summer in May, and I just started selling them out of my home. I lived in a little townhouse in the East Village. It happened to have an entrance directly on the street, and while it didn't look anything like a shop, I converted it basically into a little speakeasy store. And every weekend, I'd open the doors and put a sign out, and I'd bring all my friends over and throw what I call the Saba Saturday or Saba Sunday, a little party, and sell shoes. Over the course of that summer, I actually ended up going also flying to Gaziantep, to the town where our shoes were made. And I picked up a couple hundred pairs in bags and smuggled them back across the border. Yes, it was smuggling, but I would just sell them every weekend. And by the end of the summer, I made more money selling shoes than I made at my job. And so I quit on a Friday I told my boss I was going to pursue real estate. I wasn't up to telling him that I was actually going to go do. And
why did you not want to tell him?
It didn't seem like a very good idea. So I just decided I'd keep it to myself and not have to debate him on it. So that was sort of the origin of it all.
Did you, when you originally reached out to the maker and had him customize the pairs, at that point, were you even thinking about starting a business, or were you just more trying to find shoes that you loved and make them?
I think I was just trying to find shoes I loved. I think in the back of my head, I've always liked to start businesses, and I've always sold things and always had a bit of a side hustle. Literally since I was a kid. So I think that's sort of always percolating, or maybe in the subconscious. But at that time I just really wanted a cool pair of shoes. And I always liked, I liked the shop, and I like clothes and style, but I always like to find obscure things. And generally when I traveled, and I had the good fortune of traveling quite a bit. So for me, this was like just a super cool thing to source from an obscure, faraway part of the world that most people have never heard of.
And so when you left your job, like, what was your original vision for how you were going to build the brand? Because you were selling at that time out of your house on the weekends. Did you guys have like an online store at that point?
We didn't. I actually didn't have an online store for the first 3 years. So we kept, it was really just me. I guess I'll start. I didn't really have a vision. I just thought I'm going to just take this a day at a time, really. And I just started selling shoes. And I think I understood I had a good product. I'm naturally a pretty good salesperson and know how to put together a good ambiance, let's say, and create a cool environment. I think one of the things about our business that sets it apart and I try to hold true to is that we're really independently run. First of all, in ownership, like we've never raised money. It's always been, you know, initially funded by me and then just funded by sales. And then I think we've really built our business independent in the way we've operated, in the way we think, and the way we put ourselves out there. And so and I think that's rooted in the fact that Saba wasn't ever a business plan, or a venture that was trying to fill a need or attack a certain market. It was truly something I was just passionate about. And and it continues to be this way, but the origin of the brand was just me wanting to express myself through a business and kind of do my thing and put something out to the world that I thought people would find interesting. And through doing that, through putting out, you know, through expressing yourself, I guess it's kind of like art. Some people are attracted to it and some people aren't. I found a group of people that were attracted to the way I was doing things, which was in person, in a very analog way. I love to tell story. I love to entertain. I love to host. So, you know, by having this little townhouse where you could come get a pair of shoes and be hosted and hear story and, you know, meet the guy behind it and learn about the craftsmen. And, you know, people would come in the shop and I'd offer them a glass of wine or a tea or a Turkish coffee or whatever I might be drinking myself that day. And they were actually coming into my house. It was a really personal experience. And it was, completely antithetical and opposite to the rest of the way people were building brands at that time or building businesses, which was mostly online, direct to consumer, you know, digitally focused. And I'd say, you know, right at that time, we were sort of at the beginning of the big wave of these brands that have sort of been what I like to say hatched from laboratories, as opposed to from someone's true passion. And so I think people just felt the genuineness of it all. I think the strategy I understood was that that was interesting. It was a slow play. I didn't raise money, so I wasn't under the gun to grow fast. And I think I've intuitively understood that strategy, while very attractive and, especially on paper, has a lot of limitations to it. If you're really thinking about longevity and building a business, you know, most brands that are successful are built over a long time. They're not built in 2 or 3 years. Those were sort of the values I stuck to. And my plan was really just about those values and that kind of that expression and independence.
How do you think, because I know you said that originally you told your boss that you were going to pursue real estate. Do you feel like that was somewhat of a way for you to like protect those values and also keep your like eyesight on the long play instead of getting too caught up in today or tomorrow? Like, how do you feel like you cultivate the long-term vision and in a way do things slower?
And I get your question. I think it's really tricky. At least for me, it's been a struggle, only in that, you know, there's a lot of competing factors. You know, I think deep down I understand why we do what we do and how we're trying to build the brand. But when you look around and a lot of your peers are like growing businesses super, you know, I'm not at the end of the day a true craftsman. I'm a business person. I'm artistic and I'm creative and I work with a lot of passion and story. And I think I have that sort of like flair of an artist, but I went to Wharton, I trained in finance, I worked for a private equity fund. So at the end of the day, I have a lot of business training. I think naturally, as you watch businesses raise money, grow fast, you're lured in by that. And so I think I've struggled to find a balance. I think at first I wanted some of that and I wanted some of my original concept. And so that middle ground's a really hard place to be. I think one thing I've realized and I've continued to preach more and more recently And that's just, this is both professionally and personally, but the worst place you can be is having one foot in and one foot out of anything in life. And so I think it's really important to be, you know, to be fully invested in one idea. And I think it's taken 7 or 8 years for me to figure that out. You know, we've been lucky that I've held, you know, held true to 80% of the values. There's been times where, you know, whenever we let the values slip and we do something for purely for growth or for sales or for, you know, maybe an ideal that seems like it's been pushed upon us instead of something that we believed in, it's generally not worked. And not to say it couldn't work for somebody else, but for our context and we built the business, it hasn't, and just taking time to figure that out. So it's tough. And I think it takes a lot of, diligence and in some ways it's some courage to really believe in yourself. I think anybody that started a business would agree that one of the number one, feelings and emotions is doubt and self-doubt. And so, so obviously when you do something that's independent or maybe goes against the grain, I think anybody would naturally sort of doubt yourself. And I've done plenty of that.
And just for context, like, so originally you guys didn't have an online store. So were you doing business through like wholesale business?
Or it was still all direct to customer, but the concept was either you came to this house. We did a lot of pop-ups. So we would travel all over the country by car and often by plane and do pop-ups. And this was obviously pop-ups existed, but it was early days. I mean, I don't think, now it's like the name of the game, but we were doing pop-ups in a pretty unique way. We were basically taking the concept of Saba House, which was my house, and moving it around the country. So we'd go to DC and we'd rent a house and we'd fill it with shoes and, we'd have drinks and food and we'd set the ambiance to reflect what New York felt like. And then we'd invite everybody we knew and all of our local customers basically to come and hang. And it would turn into like this house party, family reunion meets shopping experience. And then we replicated that in like 100 cities from 2013 to 2015. I mean, we went really mad with traveling. And that was part of the brand was about travel and meeting people and in real life and like, you know, one pair at a time, and each pair is individually made and signed by the man that makes them. And likewise, I like to, think that, pretty much shook the hands of the first 10,000 customers myself. And we really sold them one pair at a time. And so that was the original ethos. And then we ended up getting a lot of attention. We got an article in the New York Times. We had quite a bit of press. We had Instagram, so that was growing. And so people started to obviously want to get our shoes that couldn't meet us in person. So we allowed for phone and email orders after about a year. And that was cool because we still got to connect with people. There was a barrier of entry, which is you had to call or write. And it wasn't exclusivity. We wanted everybody to get shoes. And it wasn't about who was allowed. It was just about kind of going through that process and being down to do so. And again, it's sort of like a long-term, short-term thing. You know, in the short term, I'm sure we lost some sales, but in the long term, the people that went through that process really were bought in. And also we were really bought in on them. They got to interact with somebody really personally at the company to find their shoe size, to find their color, to get their order processed. And we were having all kinds of issues as we grew with production. So we were able to also be really hands-on and serve people properly through that because we had more of a relationship than just a click and ship kind of thing. And so that was for the first reason. And at that point, we were processing well over $1 million of sales annually just with that store, which was in my house, pop-ups.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of business. And we didn't really do it. We did a little wholesale here and there. But I loved meeting our customers. And so I wanted to hold on to that. And I felt like it was valuable.
I was going to ask too, like the traveling pop-ups sounds so fun. Like, is that something you guys still do?
Yeah, we still do. Last year we did about 40 pop-ups.
Oh my gosh.
We have a team now that does it. So I'm not traveling quite as much. I mean, for me, it was fun. I was 25, 26, 27 years old. and traveling around the country, meeting people, selling shoes, having fun, you know, staying in cool places, you know, getting to interact with other makers, designers, like the people that bought our shoes also self-selected to all be pretty interesting. Just, you know, people that were willing to like go on a bit of an adventure for a pair of shoes to a house or a place. And they were like all types, young, old, hip, the opposite of hip, conservative, liberal, you know, Southern, Northern Yankee. You know, it was literally everything you could imagine. East Coast, West Coast, farmers to bankers, to musicians, to, you know, nurses, doctors, dentists, moms, dads, everything in between, politicians. You know, we had a handful of celebrities. So it was super fun. And then after, you know, 3.5 years of, I guess one other thing I'll say, the other value that I always instituted from the beginning was that I was, and I think it was something I said, and I realized more and more now how it played out, but, and that it, what it meant was that I wanted to build a really strong base of recurring customers, not just acquire tons of new ones. And so part of that mission was fulfilled by the way we did business. You know, it wasn't just about, you know, it was obviously about our product is exceptional. Like they're a really great pair of shoes at a good price, made with a lot of soul, and it's super apparent when you get a pair. And then beyond that, the way that we did business. So personally, as I said, those that decided to go through that process, we really bought into them as a customer and they really bought into us as a brand. And we just made sure, we just really cared. It wasn't even, it wasn't strategic as much as just the way we did things. We just really cared about everyone and took an interest. And I think that's, the result today is that that's how our customer base is. It's like, it's not huge, but you know, the majority of our business every year is those people that love us buying more and talking about our brand. You know, we never bought a single ad really until this year. We started buying a few just to test it, just as we continue to grow. But for the first 7 years, it was all word of mouth and, you know, the press that we earned and kind of traveling and putting energy out there.
It's funny because I feel like our business is so focused on communication and like really engaging people over the long term to bring them back and like provide them more like more stories about brands or things that they can really grab onto. And the way that I originally got introduced to your brand was through a good friend of mine who literally only wears your shoes.
Who's that? What's her name?
His name's Eric Bostwick. And his,
yeah, I know Eric. His yeah, wife is,
Nikki, who's also on the podcast too.
Yeah. She used to have I don't know. She saw that blog or that publication.
So she has, a newer publication called The Fullest, and they just launched a product, or more recently launched a product called the Saffron Latte. And we've been working with them for the past couple months, and Eric was like, you guys have to check out this brand. You got to connect with the founder to talk to him about how he built the business as well.
Yeah, pretty sure Eric got married in a pair of our shoes. If I'm not mistaken, we've had a lot of guys and girls getting married in our shoes, or having the groomsmen wear our shoes, or using our shoes for the dancing part of the weddings or whatever celebration they have. So that's been very fun.
That's cool. Not to change the subject too abruptly, but like, I'm curious now with everything going on, how's your team structured right now? And then in general, I know this might be kind of a hard question, like what are your thoughts going into this like new time with the whole coronavirus pandemic going on, and how are you kind of approaching your business and handling the situation?
I guess just to quickly, the rest of the story is basically we launched online in 2017, maybe late 2016. And that's, you know, now become a bigger part of our business. We also in parallel opened four additional Saba houses. So places people could go in person and, you know, receive wonderful service, have a drink, hang, buy a pair of shoes, meet people, attend a party. You know, we do all kinds of fun cultural events and things. They're like, you know, there really are houses or homes for our brand. And
are those actual traditional retail stores, or are those literally?
They're all designated retail at this point, but they weren't always. We closed our shop in Abbot Kinney. We had a store in Venice for 3.5 years. We closed just because the lease came due, and the building we were in actually became a little bit difficult to inhabit. And we just decided, you know, we like to keep things moving, so we'll reopen in LA soon. But we have a house shop in San Francisco, which is in an old mission style home. We have a shop in Dallas, which is actually an old home as well. Both are retail, but it's an old shotgun house from the early 1900s. We have our space in New York now. It's no longer in my house, but it's a big loft in downtown in NoHo. And then we have a shop in London, but that's a smaller store, but it's on a really cute kind of high street destination. And then we have a little space in the Hamptons and the beach in Amagansett, which is, it's proper retail, but it's super homey with a yard and a bar, and it's a great vibe. So we have those. So a lot of my team now is literally just the staff to run all those shops. That's the majority of it. And everybody's, you know, super passionate and operates with a lot of independence. And really, like, I want, just like I brought my personality to our brand originally, I really want the brand to reflect, you know, and be an expression of everybody involved. So that's been a big piece of it. And then, then our HQ, our HQ is here in New York, and it's me, myself. We have someone that runs our ops and e-commerce and customer service. And then the team that we control our own warehouse. It's actually in New York City. So we ship and pack everything ourselves because we want to be close and personal with our shoes. So we have a team that does that. And then a couple folks that help with marketing. And then I had a long time colleague who helps me run the stores and all of our events and travel and culture. So it's a small team. We're like 25 people, of which the majority is part-time or full-time retail staff, and then a small team in New York. The second point of your question, unfortunately, we've had to close all four stores, because of the coronavirus situation. So for now, we've repurposed, it's super hard to close shops. So all the full-time people that really relied on Saba in our store, we had some part-timers that were a day or two here and there, but all the full-time folks we repurposed, and we're all in online, which is interesting because we're so generally all in person. But we launched the chat function. So all the store staff is manning the online chat at different hours. And we're finding that to be super fun and positive. And we're creating, obviously thoughtful, but really good content and trying to share, what we're up to and what we're thinking about and what we're doing with our customers. And, I think a big part of our marketing is that it's really coming from my voice, and I truly write almost every single email that goes out. I post every Instagram still, I respond to everything. And, I really try to keep it personal because that's our connection to our customers at this point. Obviously I don't get to meet everybody, but to really make sure our marketing is coming from our voice, and a lot of it's long form and it's journalistic. And the photos we take ourselves on our iPhones, and we just keep it personal, and true. And, the couple of times we've done proper photo shoots with models and photographers, as beautiful as they've looked, we realize for us, it just doesn't work. Like, people, our customers expect us. And the beauty of that is the marketing costs pretty low. But our marketing is just like, hey, this is us. This is the story of us building our brand, our craftspeople, our customers, and every once in a while we do something fun and quirky to just make everyone laugh and or show off some cool style. So we're just really trying to put all that online as much as we can, and just speak to people truthfully and thoughtfully. And, we have a handful of values, but they all come back to the fact that through our business, I'm not real big on businesses that suggest that they're saving the world or doing too much good, because I think any business that's run well and ethically with a long-term view does good, and it's not such a big deal. But I think that, you know, our brand is, you know, we try to really be uplifting. You know, we try to smile, we try to be positive, we try to, you know, take our product seriously, but not take ourselves too seriously. You know, we try to really, you know, put a lot of care and passion and thought into what we do. And so we're just trying to keep on keeping on with that and take it a day at a time. You know, my biggest concern is, you know, right now our online shop is still going strong, and it's cooking, you know, people are shopping and supporting, and we're, you know, we're all in there, but come 2 or 3 weeks, I just don't know what's going to happen. So I'm just trying to be smart, conserve cash, you know, and plan for the worst and hope for the best. And, you know, my main goal is to keep as many people as possible employed. And that's obviously here in New York. We also employ about 30 craftsmen in Turkey. So those guys rely on the continuation of orders in the flow of our business. So that's, you know, there's a certain number of shoes we got to sell in a business we have to maintain to keep everybody going, at least at a minimum. And so I'm just trying to figure out how to get there.
Such a crazy time right now. Is there, I know we've only got a few more minutes. Is there anything that you guys have coming up over like the next 3 to 6 months that you guys are excited about, like new product launches or anything?
Yeah, we're always launching new shoes, and we've been working really closely with some fantastic, you know, we were, things are changing now, but some fantastic tanneries in Turkey to develop new leathers that are, I'm excited about, vegetable tanned and produced in a really sustainable way. Otherwise we're really trying to expand our product line. You know, we're known for our shoes, and I'm not interested in putting a lot of stuff out into the world unless we really believe in it or think it has a unique value. But we're working with a handful of artists and artisans and different folks to, and we'll have some new products launching over the next few months. We're also rebuilding our website, which probably isn't very exciting to as many people as me, but we're working with a badass web design firm out of Austria. And, you know, we've had the same website for 3.5 years, and it feels like an old used car at this point that needs to be traded in. So come May 15th, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to have a really great new web experience. It's, you know, even more efficient and effective for people that just want to shop, but also helps us reflect our brand better online. You know, because we're so offline focused, you know, we realize that our online presence probably could use a little refresh. So that's exciting. And we had a lot of great trips and pop-ups planned, and we're going to see. I hope that they can continue.
I hope so too. I hope I get to go to one of those. They sound awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Nice.
Thank you so much for spending some time with me. Bread receipt.